You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here. At a time when we are all pulling together to fight coronavirus, COVID-19, I have something for you. An all-free e-chapter on coronavirus crimes and how to fight them. Don't be a coronavirus crime victim. From door-to-door sales of fake cures and tests, vaccines, that's not real. To robocalls that are trying to scam you, to fake ads, to phishing you online, to fake cures that are being sold on the internet and on infomercials right now. You've got to arm yourself against these crimes. Please download our free e-chapter, Coronavirus Crimes. Don't be a victim. Go to crimeonline.com. You'll see it there. Hit the link and download it for free. Arm yourself against criminals and scam artists, cons that will not only take advantage of you, but take advantage of you, your parents, your grandparents, and people you love at a time when we are all fighting the virus. I hope you go to crimeonline.com and download this. It's been highly researched and presented for you for free. Goodbye, friend. Keep the faith.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
An 11-year-old little boy goes missing, and somehow nothing has been the same ever since. Did little Gannon Stalk go to a friend's home? Did he ride away on his bike, never to be seen again? Was he hiking? What happened to this little boy? Amidst very, very unusual circumstances, the truth is beginning to emerge. And right now we have breaking news in the case of missing Gannon Stalk. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here on Fox Nation and Sirius XM 111. First of all, let's kick it off. Take a listen to our friends at the get-go, KOAA NBC5. This is Katie Blas.
The community holding out hope that Gannon will be found. They've been tying up blue ribbons around the neighborhood, Gannon's favorite color, and distributing and posting flyers like this. Gannon has brown hair and brown eyes. He's 11 years old. He's 4'9 and weighs 90 pounds. And he was last seen wearing a blue jacket and jeans. Now, we spoke with Gannon's dad on Tuesday night, and he told us his son was last seen between 3:15 and 4 on Monday afternoon, and that he was going to a friend's house but didn't say which friend. The dad tells us when Gannon didn't return home a few hours later, that's when police were called. Now, a little after 10 on Tuesday, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office showed up at Gannon's home. Law enforcement were at the home and appeared to be searching the backyard with some flashlights. Gannon's parents speaking about the search for their son just moments ago.
I'm Landon Hyatt, Gannon's mom, and I encourage you guys, I know many of you mothers and fathers, I encourage you just to find him. I'm so thankful for all the outpouring help.
You are hearing our friends at KOAA at the very beginning when Gannon Stalk went missing. But even at the beginning, there were things a kilter, things that didn't quite set right with me. With me, an all-star panel to break it down today. With me, the former defense attorney for Jody Arias. He certainly knows his way around a courtroom. Trial lawyer Kirk Nurmi, author of a brand new book, Trapped with Ms. Arias, on Amazon. Cloyd Steiger, 36 years with Seattle PD. Author Seattle's forgotten serial killer, Gary Jean Grant. You can find him at cloydsteiger.com. Renowned psychoanalyst to the stars, Dr. Bethany Marshall, joining us from Beverly Hills at drbethanymarshall.com. And Dr. Michelle Dupree, South Carolina medical examiner, author of Homicide Investigation Field Guide. And let me tell you, since she won't brag on herself, Dr. Michelle Dupree has performed literally thousands of autopsies and has literally written the book, Homicide Investigation Field Guide. And Chase Go Lightly, special guest joining us, KRDO Colorado Springs, who's been on the case from the very, very beginning. Lee Egan, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter. But before we get started with Chase Go Lightly and Lee Egan, take a listen to our friends. This is at the get-go, Denver CBS Dominic Garcia.
Gannon first went missing on Monday in the 6,000 block of Mandan Drive in Colorado Springs. At that time, he was just considered a runaway. Tuesday, investigators with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office ramped up their search. They started doing more canvassing, even collecting surveillance video. Then today, this was upgraded from a runaway case to an endangered child case. That is for a number of reasons, mainly the amount of time that's gone by, the fact that this boy is only 11, the cold weather down here, and also he takes medication that he needs. The FBI has been requested to try and help find this boy. The sheriff's office is doing all they can, and so have hundreds of the general public. That is something this boy's father is extremely thankful for.
Yeah, I came out my front door, I think it was Tuesday, and there was 300 people out there searching my neighborhood. It blew me away. So
you hear the father of Gannon Stalk breaking down in tears. This was at the beginning, and always amazes me how missing children cases are always treated seemingly as a runaway at the beginning. I've gone round and round and round with police forces all over this country about this. This little boy had no history of running away. That would be like telling me, God forbid, that one of my children had run away. I know that would not be true. I know it would not be true. The frustration of thinking the cops are going down the wrong avenue at the get-go. This was not a runaway. First of all, straight out to Chase Go Lightly, KRDO, Colorado Springs news reporter. On the case from the get-go, Chase Go Lightly, at the beginning, he was classified as a runaway. Why?
Well, Nancy, like you said, he had no history of running away or anything like that. And the stepmother made the initial call saying that Gannon was missing. Of course, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office coming in right away and investigating that aspect of it.
Well,
but
you,
like you said, there's
you
no
got it
history
right. There
of running
no history.
Away. He was a great kid.
But you said the stepmother called in and stated that what he had gone to little friend's house. Is that what we thought at the beginning? Chase Go Lightly, KRDO, little friend's house?
That's right. That's what the stepmother said, is that, hey, he left for a friend's house and just never came back.
Right. Question to you. Did we ever get the name of the friend?
Yeah, no. The Letitia was never able to provide the name of the friend, any phone numbers for the parents of the friend, or even the location of the house where Gannon supposedly went.
Chase Go Lightly, right there, to Dr. Bethany Marshall. When my children, John David or Lucy, go on a play date, it's kind of an unspoken rule. The other mom knows to send me pictures. I don't mean just, hey, thanks for letting them come over. No, they send me pictures throughout the play date. And you know what? If that's too onerous for them, forget it. We just don't have a play date, because it's not the mom. The moms are great. They're wonderful. It's me. I can't take it. How do you not know the name of the child or the family where your child is going? Or the alternative, let's follow that through, Dr. Bethany. Either you know, don't know, or you won't tell. Neither of those is a good alternative, Bethany.
Nancy, first of all, he's an 11-year-old little boy. How did he get to this household? Either another mother picked him up, or the stepmother took him to the other household. You are not going to send an 11-year-old to another household without having a long history with that other family, right? Because of all the crimes that
occur. Oh, you know it, Bethany.
And then would you send an 11-year-old to another household if that other kid wasn't a pre-existing friend? And if so, they would be have sent, you know, text to each other. As you said, there would be pictures, there'd be videos, there'd be all kinds of communications back and forth between the two households. I don't like it, Nancy. I don't like the fact that there is absolutely no communication, no trace, and I hate it when there are lack of details to corroborate a story. There's only one story that holds up over time. That's the truth, backed up by details.
They used drones, horses, canines, shoulder-to-shoulder searches. They brought out the cadets, the police cadets in training. They did it all. I'll save him his breath. They did everything to find Gannon Stock, holding out the hope that Gannon still alive.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In the last hours, breaking news in the search for 11-year-old Gannon Stock. Thank you for being with us. For those of you just joining us, major news in the case. But I want to kick it off with this. Take a listen.
Yes, I watched the video at least 20, 30 times before I took it to his house. Let me make sure. First, I watched it on the tablet. I can zoom in. I can look. I saw no feet. And I turned it up. I said, okay, let me try to get a volume. She get out. She closed the door. Garage door open. She hits the alarm in a dark garage. I said, nobody got out. So then I look at on the TV so I can get a better view. And I put my phone to the TV so I can, you know, get him a better view. And I was like, no, he never got out of the truck. That's when I went over to his house and showed him.
You are listening to the neighbor of Gannon Stock, the neighbor of his family, straight out to CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter Lee Egan. Lee, what can you tell me about the neighbor that took surveillance video unwittingly of the last day Gannon was seen alive and what it showed?
Well, Nancy, the neighbor, Roderick Drayton, he lives a couple houses down from the Stout residence. And he said when he was viewing the surveillance from January 27th, the day Gannon disappeared, he saw Tisha leave the home in a red pickup truck with Gannon. He saw Gannon get into the back seat. She got into the driver's seat, and they drove away. Now, Drayton said when they came home, or when Tisha came home, she came home alone without Gannon in the truck with her.
To you, Chloe Steiger, 36 years, Seattle PD. He did not mean to take the video. The video surveillance camera was motion activated. What is the significance of what was picked up on that camera, Cloyd?
Well, the good thing is, first of all, video cameras in neighborhoods have been a big boon to detectives investigating these kind of cases because they give a visual record of what's going on. And right away, that didn't match the story she told the initial officer as to what happened. So that's really, really important to get that down. It's very good evidence.
You know, he's right. Lee Egan, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter. How does what he sees on his home video not match what the stepmother said?
She claims that he had the wrong date. She said, I know for sure that he's showing a different date because when Gannon came home with me on Monday, January 27th, he was holding a white bag in his hand. Now, there's another video going around where it does show Gannon holding this white bag in his hand, but Drayton is saying that that video was taken on Sunday the 26th and not the 27th. Letitia said, no way, that has to be the 27th. So there, you know, there's discrepancies, but I just don't see, you know, Drayton, he's the one with the video. He sees the dates. He sees the timestamps.
You know what I find also very disturbing to Kirk Nurmi, now famous defense attorney who represented Jodi Arias at trial in the murder of her lover, Travis Alexander. Kirk Nurmi, it's very, very disturbing, this aspect. I understand what the stepmother is saying. This is the wrong date. But when the neighbor went over to tell the family, hey, I've got video of your child. Do you want to see it? The stepmother said no. She didn't even want to look at the video. She hadn't even seen what it was, but she wasn't interested in seeing it. Kirk Nurmi, I mean, I know you as a defense attorney can really tear down that argument at trial, but to me, that's very significant. If somebody told me they had video of my child around the time he or she went missing, I'd be all over it.
Right. I mean, more red flags are being raised, right? We already have this strange story about what we've talked about earlier, going to this child, this friend's home, this unknown friend. And then we have her turning away from direct evidence of her supposedly missing son or stepson. So, yeah, I mean, we have more and more red flags raising around this woman, and it's makes sense that
it
there would be suspicion
bad,
drawn to
very
her.
Very bad. To you, Lee Egan, Crime Online. And during all of this, the search for Gannon, you're on the phone with the stepmother, the last one to see him alive. What were the different things she was telling you, Lee?
Oh, my goodness. Not sure where to start with that. There was, she kind of stuck to the same story with me, except for when it came to this lie detector test that she wanted to show me. And she reached out, and she's the one that kept saying, I need to show you this, but it has to be in person. I don't want to send it over email because I don't want to take the chance of it getting leaked and shared, because she wanted to maintain the integrity of this supposed current police chief that did the test for her. Each time we were going to set up a time to meet, though, there was excuses why she could not.
Oh, please tell me the excuses.
Well, the first one was there was a security, there's some kind of security issue. She said, it's major. It has nothing to do with the test, but it's major. I can't go into it right now. So I was like, okay, that's fine. We'll set up a different date. Now, on the morning, I was supposed to go from Atlanta out to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, meet her at a Starbucks where her and her agent were to show the results.
Wait. Her what?
Her agent. That's what she called him, or whoever it is. Her independent agent who did this test for her.
Okay. So this is who did the lie detector test?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Go ahead.
So on that morning, she texts and she tells me she's suicidal. She can't take it anymore. She can't meet. And then that was it. I didn't hear from her. I actually called the police out in Myrtle Beach to have them check on her. They couldn't find her at her old address. I had no idea where she was staying, because all she told me was that we were to meet at a Starbucks in Myrtle Beach. Then a couple days later, she calls again and she apologizes. And I'm like, no, that's okay. You know what? Let's forget the lie detector. Let's just meet. Finish the interview. At that point, she almost got irritated. You know, she insisted, I took this test. I passed this test. I'm going to show you this test. And then 2 days after that, she was arrested.
So quite the long line of events. Take a listen to a turn in the case.
We were told today that an additional first-degree murder charge was filed against Letitia Stout today, as were 8 crime of violence counts alleging the use of a firearm, a blunt instrument, and a knife or sharp instrument. The 11-year-old's body was found near this bridge, the Highway 90 bridge over the Escambia River near Pensacola, Florida. It was a road construction worker who found the remains Tuesday. Investigators aren't releasing any details about how the boy died. They say he was killed in Colorado and then taken to Florida. I asked how finding a body can help with an investigation. Senior District Deputy District Attorney Michael Allen said there's generally evidence on a body. He wouldn't go into specifics about the case, but did say Gannon's family is taking things very hard.
Obviously, they're distraught with this information. They were still holding out hope that Gannon would come home alive despite the original charges that we filed in this case. And they're struggling, and they rightfully would be, considering the circumstance of this case. It's tragic, and we, you know, like I said at the beginning, our hearts go out to them.
You are hearing our friends at ABC 7 News Denver. The body of this 11-year-old boy is found. And the body is found far, far away. In the last hours, a major break in the case. Take a listen to our friends at Fox 21. This is Brandon Thompson.
The affidavit alleges on Valentine's Day, Letitia told her husband 4 different stories of what happened. One says Letitia reportedly stated blood found in Gannon's room was a mixture of hers and his.
The only person that would know that would either be a forensic examiner or a person who was present at the time of the murder.
And last, Google searches. The affidavit alleges she made searches like, find a guy who wants me to take care of his kids and get paid. Why should my husband choose me over family? One day, some people will wish they treated you differently. I feel like just a nanny, not a stepmom.
Those are supportive of the prosecution's theory here, which is this is a woman who was very unhappy in her marriage. She was led to this horrific murder because she was lashing out.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, for those of you just joining us, the body of Gannon Stout found far, far away from home. And in the last hours, we are learning more and more about the police investigation. Take a listen to our friends at Fox 21, Brandon Thompson.
They say Letitia Stout lied multiple times. In fact, her story changes dramatically in the 2 days following. They say she tried to clean up the crime scene herself, but investigators found Gannon's blood stained on the cement below his bed. On Monday, January 27th, Letitia Stout reported Gannon missing at 6:55 p.m. In the 911 call, she had said he had gone to a friend's home and was supposed to be home by 6 p.m. 2 days later, she told investigators Gannon was kidnapped, saying a man she allowed in her home to fix carpet had raped her and kidnapped Gannon. Those are two of several lies investigators say Letitia Stout told them, the media, and Gannon's father, Al Stout. The day Gannon disappeared, Letitia Stout called Gannon sick out of school. When Gannon's 9-year-old sister returns home from school, she asked Letitia Stout where her brother was, and she replied he was asleep in her bed and to go play outside. According to the documents, police believe Gannon was already dead. About an hour later, Letitia sends a text to her 17-year-old daughter, who was at work all day, quote, carpet powder, two things, baking soda, trash bags. Investigators believe, quote, these items were likely to clean up the murder scene.
When I hear what we have discovered in the police affidavits, it's very heartbreaking. Straight out to Chase Golightly joining us, KRDO, Colorado Springs News reporter. The breaking news coming out of police documents and from police sources is very, very upsetting. We are learning that blood is found on the cement under Gannon's bed there in the family home. What else do we know, Chase?
Nancy, like you said, it is heartbreaking just seeing what's in that 32-page arrest affidavit. And like you said, blood found underneath Gannon's bed, blood found on light sockets, on the wall, on the carpet, more than 50 droplets of blood. Police were able to identify and confirm that it was Gannon's blood. They also were able to confirm that cleaning products that were mentioned just before, baking soda, were used to try to clean up the blood, but forensics were still able to pick it up from that trail in Gannon's room. And actually goes through all throughout the house leading up to the garage.
Nancy, can I make a comment about this crime scene?
Yes, Bethany, I was just coming to you. I'm just trying to take in the amount of blood. Go ahead.
Blood everywhere. Most women who kill their children engage in what we call a soft kill. They, even though they want to get rid of the child, they still do not want the child to suffer. They will poison the child. They will drown the child. They will put a pillow over the child's head. This stepmother brutalized the child, brutalized, hit, kicked, tortured, beat him. The MO was not just to kill him. The MO was to torture him. She hated this child. When I look at these Google searches, find me a new husband book, I feel like I'm just a nanny, not a stepmom. Husband uses me to babysit his kids. Are there any free money to move away from bad situation? There's not one Google search about the children. Did you notice that? How to help?
I want to go through those very carefully. The various Google searches that were then found on the stepmom, Letitia Stout's computer. What do we know about that, Lee Egan, Crime Online? What were the searches that the stepmother engaged in?
Oh my goodness, there were many alarming searches. In part, it was like Dr. Marshall just said, find me a new husband book. I'm overdoing all the work for my stepchildren. The stepchildren's mother should thank me the children's mother should send me a card for taking care of her children. Biological mother does nothing for her children. Find new places to live. I'm trying to remember all of them.
Jackie, let's hear Denver Fox 31, Nicole Fierro.
The affidavit alleges on Valentine's Day, Letitia told her husband four different stories of what happened. One says Letitia reportedly stated blood found in Gannon's room was a mixture of hers and his.
The only person that would know that would either be a forensic examiner or a person who was present at the time of the murder.
And last, Google searches. The affidavit alleges she made searches like find a guy who wants me to take care of his kids and get paid. Why should my husband choose me over family? One day, some people will wish they treated you differently. I feel like just a nanny, not a stepmom.
Those are supportive of the prosecution's theory here, which is this is a woman who was very unhappy in her marriage. She was led to this horrific murder because she was lashing out.
Why I feel like a nanny, not a stepmom. Why should my husband choose me over family? It goes on and on to Chase Golightly, KRDO Colorado Springs news reporter. What did you and your colleagues at KRDO discover, Chase, regarding stepmommy's various Google searches?
Well, like we just mentioned, there's a lot of things searching for, like single military, you know, men in my area. There was also some search history that he deleted that investigators were able to find. And it's just all in regards to that, showing her unhappiness with the family. The searches reveal that she just feels underappreciated as a stepmom. And also, it just looks like she was trying to get out of the marriage. I believe another thing that she was searching for was men that want me to take care of their kids and get paid for it. So it really showed in her search history that she wasn't happy in the relationship and possibly trying to get out of it and search for another military family.
To Dr. Michelle Dupree, South Carolina medical examiner and author of the Homicide Investigation Field Guide. Dr. Dupree, I'm hearing and reading in police documents and affidavits about these computer searches, and I'm trying to reconcile the amount of blood and the placement of the blood at the crime scene. Dr. Dupree, it's a real honor to have you with us today. In your expertise, what does that blood tell you?
Nancy, that blood can tell us so many things. First of all, it can tell us the approximate type of weapon that was used, whether it's high impact or low impact spatter. It can tell us where the person was when they were struck with that weapon. It can also tell us, depending on the amount of blood, it could tell us whether that person was actually killed in that spot or not.
What do you make of the fact that there was so much blood directly under his bed? Does that mean he was killed on the bed, or does that mean the bed was moved over to cover up the spot of the murder?
Nancy, it probably means that the bed was moved to cover up the spot of the murder. To soak through the mattress and to have a lot of blood on the floor after that would really be difficult. So I would imagine that the child was killed there and the blood was moved to cover it up.
Yeah, isn't it true, to Chase Golightly, KRDO Colorado Springs, that we learn after an exhaustive computer and device, electronic device search, that before stepmom called 911, she actually texted her teen daughter to go get cleaning supplies and bring them home pronto?
That is correct. Yeah, she texted her 17-year-old daughter saying, hey, can you go pick up trash bags, baking soda at the grocery store and be able to bring it back, not specifically saying in the text message what those supplies were for, but police were able to get receipts for those. And yes, according to the rest affidavit that Letitia's daughter did bring it. And also another thing I wanted to comment just about the bed and it being moved. When Gannon's father, Al Stow, came back, he was in the National Guard. He was out of state. When he came back, he said, hey, there's something wrong with this bed here. Usually it's pushed up against the wall. And when he came back, he could see it was probably a couple inches off the wall. So the father knew something maybe was kind of going on there when he was examining Gannon's room.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, thank you for being with us at Fox Nation and SiriusXM 111. Bombshell discoveries and police affidavits and police files that we have just obtained. Take a listen to our friend, CBS Denver News reporter Rick Salinger.
The investigation also revealed the stepmother's internet searches. One was for, husband uses me to babysit his kids. The court document claims Letitia Stout later changed her story that Gannon had run away to that she was raped by an intruder who then kidnapped the boy. Investigators believe Letitia Stout then took the body from the Palmer Lake area and drove it to Florida, where she dumped it beneath a bridge.
Dr. Bethany, I've got to throw this one to you. What could possess someone to murder their stepson in a bloody death, not a soft kill that you pointed out, like asphyxiation, but a violent, horrible death, and then drive over 1,000 miles to dump the child's body?
There are several motivations I can think of. First of all, she was extremely preoccupied and angry with her husband. She felt rejected. She felt left out, that he preferred other family members to her. She wanted a rich husband, not somebody who wasn't giving her money. So her rage towards her husband being taken out on the child, and perhaps she felt that he loved the child more than her. So taking her rage at her husband out on the child. Secondly, she's so preoccupied with money. I want a rich husband. Why can't I get money for taking care of this child? A woman like this who is pathologically preoccupied with the feeling that her needs are not being met are going to resent, she's going to resent the needs of the child. This is what we see with nurses and caregivers and nannies who kill children. Often at some pathological twisted level, they feel that their needs are not getting met. So every time they feed the child, hug the child, offer the child something, they also resent the child for being beloved and getting their needs met. And so these are two very compelling motives that I can think of, besides the fact that she's just twisted and personality disordered.
Take a listen to Fox 21's Brandon Thompson.
She called 911 to report Gannon missing just before 7 that night. 3 hours later, deputies respond to the home and Letitia consents to a search of the home, not finding anything suspicious at that time. However, in the 5 searches of the home by the Metro Crime Lab in the weeks following, they found Gannon's blood in the garage, on the trunk of Letitia's car, and in his basement bedroom. There was so much blood, the documents say, it had soiled through the mattress, leaked through the carpet, and stained the cement below. Then, tracking Letitia's car, investigators found that she had driven to Highway 105 the following day at 9:15 p.m. and stayed for about 30 minutes. Then, 3 days later, she returned in a different car that the sheriff's office had put a tracking device on. On February 15th, investigators found Gannon's blood on a particle board in that area, but could not find a body. They say Letitia Stauch returning to the Highway 105 area shows, quote, Letitia disposed of Gannon's remains at nighttime and likely was nervous about the location she chose, and that investigators believe, quote, she went back to the area to view the area while sunlight was available to ensure no evidence was viewable from the road. At 10:45, the night after Gannon disappeared, she texted investigators saying multiple times, quote, what do you want from me?
That was certainly a mouthful. That's drinking from the fire hydrant. I just couldn't take it all in. But I'm hearing this. I'm hearing a lot of good police work. At some point, Cloyd Steiger, 36-year Seattle PD, author, Seattle's Forgotten Serial Killer, Gary Jean Grant on Amazon. Cloyd, did you hear that? You know you've got to get a search warrant to do this from an impartial magistrate, but they put a tracking device on some other car, not the car she normally drove, and tracked her around, and it took them, after they went there, I guess that's how they found it, particle board, out in the middle of nowhere with Gannon's blood on it.
Yeah, there was a lot of good police work done by the detectives in this case. And I read the affidavit, and the evidence is insurmountable almost with everything. And you're right, doing the right things, getting a search warrant when needed, not cutting any corners. But I'd also like to briefly talk about those Google searches. What a boon for the detectives that this woman uses Google as her personal diary. What kind of searches are those? I mean, that's damning.
It is damning, and it takes a forensic expert to recover all that. But if you know how to do it, it's not hard to do. It may be as simple as looking at the history. Another issue I'm hearing, Lee Egan, CrimeOnline.com, remember when you spoke on one of your many conversations with the stepmom, she was talking to you and giving you some story about why she took this circuitous route? Explain to everybody what she told you. Now, this is where his body ended up being, the blood on the particle board ended up being found. What did she tell you she was doing?
Exactly. She said she took the back roads, a longer route, because there had been a wreck, I believe, on the main highway on the morning of the January 27th. And she said she needed to go to Castle Rock, which is around an hour away from their home, to buy her husband some kind of specialized bicycle. She said on the way there, they stopped at Play It Again Sports, which is a used sporting good store, so she could trade in old equipment to buy Gannon hockey equipment. But there's no confirmation that that ever happened. As far as the bike shop, there's no she didn't even give me the name of it.
And you know, Lee Egan, you told me something really telling, that during all this, she left her cell phone at home. Who does that when you go on a trip? But she forgot she had on her Apple Watch, which tracks your movements. You know, I heard another thing. Dr. Michelle Dupree, renowned medical examiner out of South Carolina and author, Homicide Investigation Field Guide, I just learned something new from all of these documents. The blood did seep through the mattress. He had a basement bedroom and it went down through the cement. See, I didn't know that. So that's a lot of blood, Dr. Dupree.
Absolutely. That is definitely a lot of blood. And we can actually determine how much blood that is by doing an experiment if we need to prove that there is a murder without a body.
How?
We will use something like an IV equipment, you know, the intravenous equipment, where we have a bag of blood and we drip that blood or titrate it onto a similar mattress, the same size, same weight, until we have the same blood pool that we have at the crime scene, and we can measure that amount of blood.
You've done that before?
We have.
You know what? Every time I talk to you, you amaze me all over again. Between you and Dr. Bethany, I mean. So Chase, go lightly. KRDO Colorado Springs on the scene. What happens now, Chase?
Yeah, just from here, we're just, you know, waiting to see what happens next with Letitia being, you know, back in court.
Oh, you're on a first name basis now?
Letitia, just calling her that, I guess, or the stepmom. But just kind of what happens from here is that we just want to try to get more information on exactly how did she get the body over to Florida and everything like that. And the arrest affidavit, like I said, it was completed before investigators found the body in Florida. So that's just the more information that we're trying to look out for right now. Is just to see how was she possibly able to do that, and then how many days after that did she get arrested in South Carolina and then extradited back to Colorado?
Guys, we wait as justice unfolds. Nancy Grace, Crime Story, signing off. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.